It's the eye of the tiger, the thrill of the fight, rising up to podcast with our rivals. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is not a man. He is a piece of iron.
Wow. I've never been called that before, but thanks, Mike. I'm Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I'm excited to talk about people punching each other and stuff.
Yeah, that's always good. I feel like most of the movies that we talk about, you can probably say that, is the description of those movies.
I'm surprised that's not
that. And stuff. That's like
I'm surprised that's not the IMDb description of every movie.
Yeah, those people, they'll be punching. Yep. Stuff.
And things like that.
If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news and then we move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. After that, we move on into our featured review. This week, we are reviewing the newest film from director Ryan Coogler and the new sequel slash spinoff to the Rocky franchise, Creed. So, Mike, you ready to kick things off?
Yeah, let's get into some film news.
All right. So for film news, a couple of things to talk about today. Christopher McQuarrie, director of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, as well as Jack Reacher and The Way of the Gun, is going to be returning to the Mission Impossible franchise for Mission Impossible 6. So that's awesome. That's cool.
Sweet. Yeah. I like that.
I had such an odd reaction to this news when it first came out, because one of the things I absolutely love about Mission Impossible is that the directors change every time. Right. And they always bring their, like, unique style to those movies. So, for example, Brian De Palma was Mission Impossible 1, John Woo did Mission Impossible 2, J.J. Abrams did Mission Impossible 3, and Brad Bird did 4. And McQuarrie, just this past summer, did Mission Impossible 5, Rogue Nation. And so he's the first one to ever return, like, for a Mission Impossible movie.
Right.
And I saw that news, and I was like, well, one of the things I really love about Mission Impossible is that it changes every time. Mm-hmm. But Mission Impossible 5 was so good. Like, I'm
yes, 100%.
I'm totally cool with this. This is
yeah, I think you're right. It's awesome that they do change, and you know, we get different styles and everything with every installment. But outside of the first Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation is my favorite. Like, it's the best one.
Really, I think Ghost Protocol is my favorite personally. But
fair, okay, yeah, that's also reasonable. I mean, they were okay, and then 4 and 5 were really good. So, but I'm not mad that he's coming back, like he said.
Yeah, like it's just like a cool thing. And also, Rebecca Ferguson's going to be coming back as well. Rebecca Ferguson was, I forget her character's name, but she was in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Yes.
And she was hugely regarded as like this terrific character. Everybody loved her. She was like a huge part of why people love that movie. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be the first female lead in a Mission Impossible movie to return for another movie.
There you go.
Which is cool, because it's, you know, you've been watching the ensemble of Mission Impossible kind of build up over time.
Right.
Right? Like, Mission Impossible 3 added Simon Pegg, and Mission Impossible 4 added, like, Jeremy Renner. And then, you know, Mission Impossible 5, you had just, like, all those guys play, like, there, and it was, like, a cool team-up sort of movie. But you don't have any, there have been female agents in the movies before, but none of them have come back for other movies.
Right.
So it's cool that Rebecca Ferguson, who everybody seemed to love, is going to be back.
Yeah, I'm excited. It'll be cool. I'm sure it'll be good. I don't know. It's always funny when we do these like kind of news stories where like it's the very first piece of information about the project,
right?
And we're like, well, we'll see this in 2 years. So
true. Yeah. That is true. So we know nothing about Mission Impossible 6 other than that it is a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
Christopher McQuarrie is going to be directing it, and he directed the fifth one, and that was really good.
Mm-hmm. So based on that, I'd say it's going to be good.
Yeah, I have good high hopes. Rebecca Ferguson will be back, and presumably Tom Cruise will also be back.
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess.
All right, so moving on from that news, I did want to mention that it's that time of year where critics groups have started naming their top movies of the year, the top 10 lists, then their awards and what have you. Pretty soon, a couple weeks, probably getting the nominations for the Golden Globes and for the Oscars.
Yes.
But for now, various critics groups are doing their part to name movies as the best of the year, and the National Board of Review was the first one to do so, and they came out right out the gate by naming Best Picture of the Year as Mad Max Fury Road.
Amen.
So they have made the right choice.
Correct. Yep, they chose wisely.
And other critic groups have followed suit. There's other groups have also named Mad Max either Best Movie of the Year, or they've named George Miller Best Director. And it's one of the heavy hitters now. Yeah. It's up there with Spotlight, which is also getting a lot of the Best Picture of the Year awards, as well as Carol.
Right. Spotlight seems like a very much more traditional, like, Best Picture winner. But Mad Max is also up there. I don't know. I hope that would be insane. My mind would explode.
Can you imagine if Mad Max Fury Road was nominated for Best Picture of the Oscars? Like,
what if it is? Like, what if it is?
What if it's nominated? What if it wins?
Right? Like, because it totally should.
It's like, I'm not sure whether I would say it's the best movie of the year, but I think it's just so, like, audacious and awesome, and, like, it totally deserves recognition, and so.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody loved it. Like, it's not like it's a case where, like, it's just a really popular movie. It's not like Jurassic World, where it made a bunch of money, but got mixed reviews. This is a movie that everyone loved.
Yeah.
And it made a decent amount of money, but it also, like I can't think of a blockbuster in the last 5 years that has had the critical consensus of Mad Max. Maybe, like, Toy Story 3.
Right. You know? Yeah, but nothing has been, like, bucked so many trends in terms of filmmaking and stuff, and then also been regarded, like, had such wide critical response, like, good.
Yeah. it's not the kind of movie that you normally see in, like, awards stuff like this.
Yeah, in this kind of discussion.
Yeah, so it's crazy to see it there, but it's really encouraging, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's got hope. I got hopes.
Yes. And our other piece of film news for today, and this is tenuously related to our review today, which is Creed, directed by Ryan Coogler. Ryan Coogler, director of Creed, is in talks to direct Marvel's Black Panther movie. So, Mike, without spoiling your thoughts on Creed, mind you, what do you think of Ryan Coogler directing Black Panther?
Based purely on Creed, because I don't know what else he's done.
Well, Creed is the second movie. He also directed Fruitvale Station.
Oh, okay.
With Michael B. Jordan a couple years ago, which I never saw, but I heard he was very
good. I never saw that either, actually. But I know it was people liked it a lot.
Okay, you can go ahead and spoil your thoughts on Creed if you want. If that helps you.
No, it's okay. I mean, I'm on board. I guess I liked Creed. That spoils my thoughts on Creed. I'm on board with this. I'm very excited for Black Panther. And I want it to have a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Creed, and I thought Ryan Coogler's direction in particular was fantastic. I thought there were so many great things visually that he did in Creed that I think he could really bring to Black Panther in a really cool way.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, it's Ryan Coogler is an African-American, and so it's cool that Marvel is trying to get, you know, a diverse director and a diverse team together for Black Panther, which will be their first black superhero.
Right, yeah, it should be cool. I liked... You're right. I did like a lot of stuff that was going on in Creed in terms of direction and, you know, cinematography and that kind of stuff. So I think it'll be pretty neat to see that kind of thing in a Marvel movie.
It'll be pretty swell.
Pretty cool.
It won't be bad.
Yes.
It won't be bad. All right. Well, I guess that about wraps up film news. That was pretty short.
That was a pretty quick segment,
shorter than usual. I guess news has kind of slowed down a little bit in the past couple weeks or so. I guess, you know, everybody's kind of winding down at the end of the year, and also everybody's just kind of focused on Star Wars.
Yeah, we're focused on Star Wars. Also, post Star Wars, we ramp up for award season. So I feel like
we got a week and a half after Star Wars to get all the Oscar movies in there.
And only because no one has the audacity to go up against Star Wars, so they're all got to wait till after it.
And interesting thing about Star Wars has been ineligible.
Will be amazing.
Yeah, so. I'm excited for Star Wars. Like, I'm not saying it will be amazing because I don't want to jinx it, but like...
Not to spoil our thoughts about Star Wars.
But I have started my Star Wars rewatch. I've watched The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones so far. So compared to those...
Right, it can only go up.
If I just watched those, Star Wars The Force Awakens might be the greatest movie ever made.
Those are the only two movies you've ever seen.
But what I'm saying is that an interesting note about the critics circles that are doing their awards, Star Wars The Force Awakens is ineligible for a lot of those awards. Because it has not screened for critics yet, and won't until December 14th, when the premiere it's going to premiere for like select critics in New York and LA.
Wow!
I think there's going to be a premiere in London as well. It's like Disney has this movie locked down in secrecy.
Yeah.
And
which is kind of awesome. I'm kind of glad. I really, it's fun to have everyone be at the same level of unknowing. Like, it's just
exactly,
cool.
Exactly, yeah. But it has been interesting to watch movie critics on Twitter putting out their top 10 lists and stuff, but throwing in the caveat that they haven't seen Star Wars yet, or
right.
And you have debates between certain critics who are like, I can't put out my top 10 list until I see Star Wars. And other ones are like, Star Wars is probably not going to make my top 10. I'm just going to put...
Wow. How dare they?
I mean, look, there are people who like Star Wars but don't like it as much as we do. Or there are people who don't like Star Wars, Mike.
No,
there's
not.
They're wrong. But they... they should be shunned from society, but I mean...
All right. As long as we can end on that note.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be the most exclusionary podcast.
Yes.
Of all time. But
this is what happens when we record at 10 p.m. instead of at noon.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm more awake at 10 p.m. than I am at noon anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, let's be real.
All right, so I guess we can move on from film news into our discussions. So, Mike, you only got the one movie today?
Yes. So my discussions today is a film that came out in August called No Escape, which I don't remember what movie we were at.
Right, I remember we were at a movie and we saw the trailer for No Escape.
Yeah, which I had never heard of.
Yeah,
or,
we were both completely in the dark on this movie, and this trailer just came up, and it was like Owen Wilson and Lake Bell, who are like comedy people. And it turned into like this really intense thriller, and the trailer was really good. Like I thought it looked great. I didn't see it, and now you have seen it.
Yeah, and then it just kind of disappeared, and I never heard about it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it got, like, mixed reviews when it came out, I feel like, is what I heard.
Probably. I could see that happening. but then I don't know how, I think I saw a commercial or something that it's out on DVD, so I went and checked it out. And it's, so it stars Owen Wilson, Lake Bell, Pierce Brosnan, and it's directed by John Eric Dowdle, who's a director primarily of horror movies. He's only done like five or six movies. He did The Poughkeepsie Tapes, As Above, So Below, the two Quarantine films, and everyone's favorite quasi M. Night Shyamalan movie, Devil.
The first film of the Night Chronicles.
Right.
That never continued past that first film.
Never happened. It's co-written by John Eric Dowdle and his brother Drew, who wrote all of those previous films together except for Devil, because we all know who wrote that. So it's about Owen Wilson takes his family with Lake Bell. Lake Bell's plays his wife. He has two young daughters. They go to a unnamed Southeast Asian country, which I feel like I remember was Thailand. And then they like made them take that name out. Like they made them take it out of the film, so it's not unnamed.
Okay.
But I also don't remember where I heard that, so I probably just made it up. So they move there for business, you know, to start over and a new chance at life. And while they're there, a political revolution erupts, and it becomes a survival thriller, basically. It's about Owen Wilson and his family trying to escape this, you know, the rebels and all this stuff going on. Pierce Brosnan's there being cool old British guy who seems to have know what he's doing in this kind of situation, which was pretty cool because he's kind of now he's accepted his role as old James Bond, basically, in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's super, super tense. Like, I didn't expect it to be like there was a moment I was saying earlier where I was watching the film. Everything hits the fan. It's going crazy. And I realized I had been holding a potato chip in my hand for about 5 minutes. Because I had picked it up before it happened, like before stuff happened, and then I just couldn't, like, I was not breathing, and it was like, I couldn't eat this chip because I couldn't look away.
Right, just with your mouth open, chip almost in there, but like.
Yeah, I was like, Ray,
like a cartoon character.
Yes, exactly. and I think that comes from, you know, the Dowdles, I guess, they're, you know. Their horror background, they know how to work with tension and stuff. I think a lot of their films are found footage. I think Quarantine is too. I don't know. But I know As Above, So Below and the Poughkeepsie Tapes are found footage films. So there is a lot of that going on. Like, the camera's close to a lot of people, not close ups, but it's near all the action. It feels very claustrophobic and you don't really have a chance to understand what's going on, and it you know, it adds to the, that's what these characters are experiencing, this political revolution. It's insane. It's really cool. So I think people should check it out, since I saw the trailer once and then never saw it, like never heard about it again. So I want to get it out there. People should check it out.
Yeah, cool. That's No Escape, and that's available on DVD right now. Where'd you get that? Redbox? Or did you just...
Yeah, sure. We could go with Redbox.
All right, fair enough. So for my discussions, I got a couple things I want to talk about. The first of which is Spotlight, which I mentioned earlier as one of the movies that has been winning a lot of the end-of-year critic awards. Spotlight's a movie directed by Thomas McCarthy, who directed Win-Win a couple years ago, which is a movie I really liked with Paul Giamatti as a wrestling coach. This movie stars Michael Keaton, Rachel McAdams, Mark Ruffalo, Liev Schreiber, John Slattery, Stanley Tucci, and a bunch of other people. And I really enjoyed this movie. It's about the group of reporters at the Boston Globe, mm-hmm. who broke the news that the Catholic Church was molesting kids,
right,
in the early 2000s. And it's really interesting. It's really it basically just presents it as like a matter of fact case. You know, it's very reliant on you wanting to just watch reporters and the process of getting a story.
Right.
It's in that way. I've seen it compared a lot to All the President's Men, which is a very similar movie. Actually, one of the characters in this movie is based on a person who is like the son of somebody who was involved in All the President's Men. Like the real person is the son, right, of the real person from All. is what I mean by that. Yeah. And so there's parallels to that for sure. But it's really interesting, and it's really good. It's very powerfully acted all around. Michael Keaton's great. Rachel McAdams is great. Mark Ruffalo is great. And it's, you know, the direction is very sparse. It's very like observant. Like it just lets you like kind of soak in what's going mm-hmm. on. It doesn't do anything like, there's no crazy visual flourishes or anything, but I think that kind of adds to it in a way. Cause it kind of just presents it as like a true life case. Mm-hmm. And it does it really well. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I don't think it's one of my favorite movies of the year, but it's up there. It's one of those movies that I like really, really liked, didn't quite love.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I really enjoyed it anyway, and I definitely think people should check it out. Yeah. And people probably will, because it's winning a bunch of awards.
Right. I'm sure that'll be in contention for some kind of award. It's got that feel to it.
I think it's got a Best Picture nomination locked down at the Oscars, personally. But we'll see. I think what will be really interesting...
if it loses to Mad Max.
That would be cool, too. But... What I was reading on, like, so in 1976, All the President's Men was nominated for Best Picture, and it mm-hmm. lost to Rocky. And I think it would be amazing.
This is all part of the Hollywood conspiracy.
If new All the President's Men lost to new Rocky, like, wow. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. That'd be crazy.
That'd be pretty wild.
I'd have to put tinfoil on after that. I'd give up.
Right. You'd be like Joaquin Phoenix in Signs.
Just... yes. You know, look away, children.
And the other I want to talk about a couple of TV shows as well in my discussions. First of which is South Park Season 19, which, as we're recording this now, is airing its season finale.
Okay. So I'm sorry to tear you away from that, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be watching that probably as soon as we finish up. But... South Park Season 19. So, I mean, are you a fan of South Park, Mike?
In general, yes. I have never, like, followed the show, but okay. I always enjoy whatever episode I watch.
Okay, I mean, it's kind of, I would consider myself a casual fan of the show. I have watched entire seasons of the show before. Like, I've just been like, you know, I'll watch South Park and I'll follow it for, like, a little while. But I fell out, and then I came back in, and then I fell out again, and... you know, it's a show that I have really enjoyed over a long period of time. I really love Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Right.
But it's not something that I had, like, consciously watched in a while, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I had heard really good things about the previous season, Season 18, which I've since seen a couple episodes of. And that, apparently, what Season 18 did, it was start to introduce serialized elements to the show.
Okay.
And nothing, like, too major, I don't think. Like, but, you know, it started to have, like, its own kind of arc. Season 19... this current mm-hmm. season right now has kicked that into 12th gear and has delivered one of the most biting satires of this entire show's history. It takes on PC culture in a big way mm-hmm. And takes on Donald Trump, and it takes on Caitlyn Jenner And
yep.
A lot of other stuff as well. And it takes on the idea of like internet safe spaces, and it takes on the idea of sponsored content, you know, ads disguising themselves as journalism.
Yep.
And it turns it into this crazy science fiction narrative
okay.
That has shades of Ex Machina and like the Matrix and Terminator in it. And it just, it's been going all out, and it's been amazing. And also it's been really funny.
Yeah.
As you would expect, you know, and it's particularly it's taking on PC culture has been really funny to watch. That South Park gets a new principal this year named PC Principal, who is this douchey college bro who is like the head of a frat, and it's the frat's called they're PC bros, and they're
right.
they're like douchey college guys who are like politically correct just so they can get pussy.
Oh my god!
And it's really funny. It targets like a very specific kind of individual, and it does it really well, and it's really good. So this is South Park season 19. I really think you should like just take a day and watch like
South and just Park. Watch this.
Yeah, like it's really worth it. Like it's been like I was watching it. I kind of just came into it. Like I watched the premiere with my friend at his house, and I was like, hey, this is really funny, and just kind of like, oh, I'll watch the next one, whatever. And I wasn't expecting to watch the whole season. I was just like, yeah, whatever, watch South Park. And then I started getting enveloped in this in this new show and in this new like storyline and arc. And I'm really excited to see how it concludes. And I think, you know, the serializing the show has been like this huge thing. Cause it's South Park has not had serial like. It was very against continuity for like the first like 17 years of its life.
Yeah. I was going to say that's pretty insane that a show managed to go 19 seasons before being like, yeah, let's make a story. Like, it's like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But good
like,
for them.
Yeah. Like cool. It was a show where at one point they used to kill Kenny every episode.
Every episode. Yeah. Like.
So that's South Park season 19. It's well worth checking out. I've had a lot of fun watching it. One of my favorite episodes was the Yelp episode, which has all like a bunch of the people in South Park considering themselves food critics because they post reviews on Yelp.
Yep.
Really funny.
That's awesome.
And yeah, every episode just kind of takes like this very like specific target that like you don't even think about that much, but once you like see the episode, you're like, yeah, those people suck.
Right. Yeah.
So that's South Park season 19, and the other show I want to talk about is the other best drama on television. The Leftovers season 2, which just finished its season on HBO. Now, Mike, I know you've been watching Leftovers, but you have not seen the finale.
Yes, I missed the finale this week.
Yeah, what is wrong with you, man?
I have no idea. Well, I got a PS4, so like I haven't not been playing that.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. But you know, like you can download HBO Go on your PS4, man.
Yeah, but who knows what the account info is? It's like a whole thing, Mike.
If you can tear yourself away from Star Wars Battlefront for 75 minutes, which is the length of the finale of Leftover Season 2,
okay,
you're going to be blown away. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I've loved the last 7 episodes.
Yeah,
so
this season as a whole has been, like, utterly unreal. I feel like there's nothing like The Leftovers on TV right now.
Yeah, not even close.
Like, there's no show that, like, I get... I actually get stressed out about The Leftovers. Like, when I'm watching it, it's over.
It's fine. Like, I can watch it, and then afterwards, I'm like, wait, did that mean something? And then I have no idea what's going on anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so
and,
good.
You know, it's been really bold and different, and it's been, like, doing crazy experiments, and, like, it's taken this really great point of view narrative. Like, it has its characters, and the first season kind of did this once in a while where it would, like, just do an episode from one character's point of view.
Right.
It did it, like, a couple times in that season, but overall, that season was mostly, like, a normal show. Like it was,
yeah,
but this season, I think almost every episode has been like from at least one character, like one or two characters' point of view.
Yeah, which is amazing.
And it's made for like really fascinating TV. And
yeah,
you know, at the end of the first season, I had no idea where season 2 of The Leftovers could go, because I didn't think its premise was like sustainable,
right?
You know, because the idea behind the show is that before the show started, like 2% of the population on Earth just suddenly disappeared. And now this is the world that's trying to deal with this, like dealing with this crazy event that happened, and not even dealing with like the immediate aftermath, just dealing with it like 3 years later when everybody's like, yeah, that's the thing that happened. And everybody's really sad about it. And so I didn't like, it was a really fascinating show in season one, but I had no idea if it could be sustainable for season two. And it's turned out I can't wait for, I really hope season three happens. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Like right away.
Like, and it has to, it's like one of their biggest, I mean, I don't know if that's true at all, but it's like, well, critically, it seems to be getting a huge reception.
Yeah. It's turned a lot of heads this year. Cause it was very polarizing in season one. And I think it's still very polarizing now, but it's made a lot of converts into, like,
right.
People have become bigger fans of the show now.
Yeah. And I think that, like you said, having almost every episode be centered or, you know, from someone else's point of view is a really cool way to build the world rather than having to force a main, like, one character into all these situations. We could just go wherever we want, and it's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. That's the leftover season two. And yeah, season three is not a sure thing right now, from what I understand. I guess it, like, I see no reason why HBO can't get season three.
Yeah, come on.
Like, you got that Game of Thrones money, you know.
Yes.
Like, The Leftovers probably costs like a 50th of what Game of Thrones costs.
Everything compared to Game of Thrones is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
they could do it. They got all that extra money from canceling Brink season two now.
Zing. Take that, HBO.
Got him.
So yeah, that's The Leftovers. And actually, people dressed as the Guilty Remnant and were smoking outside of the HBO studios with
oh my god,
with signs that said Renew on them.
That's terrifying.
It was like the day after the season finale. So it's
best idea.
It's the best. Yeah. So that's The Leftovers. It's the best show on TV right now. Well, not now because now it's over, but like, It's fantastic. It's probably, like, when all is said and done, this is the time of year where people do their top 10 lists, as we mentioned before, yes. And TV critics are doing that as well for 2015. For me, however, I don't view TV as, like, I view the TV season as going from, like, June to May, as opposed to January to December, because that's the Emmy eligibility rules.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And like most TV seasons will start in September and end in May, you know?
Right.
So I can't say for sure where The Leftovers will be in like my top five dramas, by the end of the year, but I feel like it almost definitely will be.
Yeah. Come on. Let's be real.
Like right now it's my favorite show.
It'll be right behind Flash.
Right. Like honestly, right now, my three favorite dramas are The Leftovers, Fargo, and The Flash. So
that's awesome.
So when the Emmys roll around, you'll know what got snubbed.
Man, I really thought Fargo was going to get it. That's what we'll be saying come Emmys time.
Yep, once The Flash sweeps the awards. All right. Well, I guess that about wraps up for our discussions. So are you ready, Mike? Let's move on into our featured review of Creed.
You're not built for this. These boys come in here, they gotta fight for life. People die in the ring. Your daddy died in the ring.
I don't know him. Ain't got nothing to do with me. I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me. Every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready. Sick ties on the nose pressure. Actually, snip zip ties on the protesters. Six wives in the fry of a mold weather. Medic caviar bar out in Odessa. Dirty needles breaking all the old records. On their hose, one shovel is old treasure. OZ use Steve as a gold tester. Finger rolls, single waves, passing from the old level. Pictures from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
All right, guys, that was from the trailer for Creed, the newest film from director Ryan Coogler, written by Ryan Coogler and Aaron Covington. And it stars Michael B. Jordan as Adonis Creed, Sylvester Stallone as the Italian Stallion Rocky Balboa, Tessa Thompson, Felicia Rashad, Wood Harris, Tony Bellew, and Graham McTavish, among others. The IMDb plot synopsis reads, the former world heavyweight champion Rocky Balboa serves as a trainer and mentor to Adonis Johnson, the son of his late friend and former rival, Apollo Creed. That is correct.
That's pretty good.
Good work, IMDb.
Yeah, way to go.
Yeah. Before we start talking about Creed and stuff, let's talk a little bit about our relationship to the Rocky franchise. Mike, are you a fan?
Yeah. I've only seen definitely Rocky 1, and I think Rocky 2, but they're like all part of the public consciousness, and I've seen parts of most of them.
So you've never seen 3, 4, 5, and 6?
Not that I know of or remember. Really? I've seen the important parts.
This is disappointing.
Mostly
the
fights.
This is disappointing, man.
I know. I'm a Shav. We all know those already.
Well, I am a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. So did you? When I made that Rocky 4 reference at the beginning, did you not even get that? When I said you are not a man, you're a piece of iron?
I mean, I knew that's about Ivan Drago.
Okay.
I think.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. See, I can keep up. I have a conversational knowledge, Mike.
All right. Well, I have
approximate knowledge of many things.
Flat, like, drive-by knowledge.
Yeah,
like,
that's all. Just I hope no one asks a second question.
That's good. That's how I get through most of life.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. I love it. And I haven't really, like, sat down and watched them in a while, but I saw them all when I was a kid. Rocky 1, I've seen many times. Rocky 2, I've also seen many times. Rocky 1, I still think, is a phenomenal movie. Rocky 2 is also a really good movie. And Rocky 3 is a lot of fun. It's good. I like Rocky 3. It's definitely more cartoonish than the previous two films, but it's still fun. And Rocky 4 is bad, but
but
Rocky 4 is like not a good movie, but I love watching it. Like it's
when Rocky defeats communism, right?
Yeah, when Rocky ends the Cold War.
Exactly.
Oddly enough, they never mentioned that he ended the Cold War in
No. You think everyone would know, and like he would talk about that all the time. About how he saved the free world.
Yeah, they would teach that in schools.
Yes. Yeah.
But alas, but Rocky.
I guess I also saw Balboa, or Rocky Balboa, whatever it was called.
You saw Rocky 6?
Yes,
Rocky 6 is good. That's
it. Yeah, it was pretty good actually.
Yeah, that's a good movie. But anyway, Rocky 4 is bad, but it's like the kind of bad that I really enjoy. It's like just 80s cheese. Yep. Like there's so many things in that movie where it's like, what were they thinking? Like, why is this happening? And that's a movie that's more montage than it is movie. Like it's
right. Right.
And then Rocky 5 is also not very good. And I haven't seen Rocky 5 since I was like 10, but I remember not liking it. And something that somebody brought up that recently about Creed and about Rocky Balboa is that Rocky 5 actually has similar themes to both of those movies in terms of like watching Rocky age and like how he's like becoming less of the masculine like Adonis that he once was and is now like
is now
getting older and like, you know, he's getting older on and getting an age, and you know, it's about the themes of like mentoring another person and all that kind of stuff. And Rocky 5 has a lot of problems with it, but I think what people pointed out is that Rocky 5 doesn't work primarily because Sylvester Stallone is not old enough to play those themes up yet.
Right.
You know, that was back in 1990. And then 16 years later, Rocky Balboa revisited those themes again. And that movie was a lot better. And I was very happy with Rocky Balboa as, like, the finale for this character. Like,
yeah.
I didn't need to see any more Rocky after that. Like, that was a really good footnote to end it on. And I was just happy that the series was able to end on a good note because Rocky V is really bad.
Right. And it could actually deal with those themes appropriately because he's old now.
Yeah, exactly.
Or then.
Yep. But now, Rocky 7.
Yeah.
Adrian's Revenge. that's a joke from The Simpsons.
Rocky 7, Creed 1. First Blood, Part 3, Rambo 1. Sylvester Stallone needs a crash course on naming things.
Yep. So now, 9 years after Rocky Balboa, we have this movie Creed, which, you know, has, I didn't expect to see a continuation of the Rocky franchise. I didn't know if I wanted to see a continuation to the Rocky franchise. But Ryan Coogler actually came up with this idea for this Creed movie and actually came to Sylvester Stallone with it. Like, okay. this wasn't Stallone's idea. This was, you know, Ryan Coogler's. And it became this, like, really interesting thing. And, you know, I didn't really know that much about Creed until the trailer hit a few months ago. And we talked about this trailer.
Yeah.
Back when it came out. And the trailer just blew me away. I thought it looked amazing. And I'm happy to say that the movie also did the same thing to me.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought this movie was fantastic, and quite frankly, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. Possibly.
Wow.
Possibly my favorite.
You take that back. No, I'm kidding. it was good. I liked it. I wouldn't put it that high for me, but it definitely was good. I enjoyed it. There was a lot of really cool choices for, like, camera work stuff, direction, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
Which made this feel fresh. Like, it felt like a new... Yeah, it wasn't just like, here's Rocky 7, you know,
right.
Like, you know what I mean? So that was cool. That made it good.
All right.
I lost my train of thought.
That's
exactly.
It, everybody.
I forgot where I was trying to go, so I ended with that.
Yeah, but no, I agree with you. It felt like this, it like revitalized the world of Rocky for me. And
yeah.
You know, the Rocky movies have never, like, been super well-known for their direction. But I think this, like, really, like, creates a new visual dynamic for the movie and does a lot of really interesting things. And I'm not saying that the previous Rocky movies were poorly directed, although, I mean, Sylvester Stallone was the director for most of them. And not that he's a bad director, but, like, Rocky, really, like, Rocky 4 and 5, man. Like,
like, come on.
But... In any case, what I really loved about this movie is that it never feels like it's pandering to fans of the series,
right.
And it like definitely exists within the world of the Rocky universe. But it takes the foundation of what those movies have built, and it makes something new out of it, which is cool. And it takes elements from all of the Rocky movies to form this one. Like, it mentions the fight at the end of Rocky III between Rocky and Apollo, their fight behind closed doors that ends with "You want to ring the bell, Apollo?" And, you know, freeze frame, you don't know who won.
Right.
And that actually becomes a plot point in this movie, that, you know, secret fight behind closed doors. And the fact that Apollo Creed died in Rocky IV is the emotional backbone of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like the whole plot.
Yeah. And it's amazing that a movie as silly as Rocky IV could be the emotional backbone of like a really great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's impressive. That even lends more to the fact that I don't know why they don't talk about his defeating communism.
they mention that fight a few times. Not the fight with Rocky and Ivan Drago, but the fight with Apollo and Ivan Drago.
Right, yeah.
But they never mention Ivan Drago by name.
No.
And I feel like that's definitely a conscious choice.
I feel like they probably would have, although if they just got the rights to it. No, I don't know.
No, I'm sure they have the rights to it.
I do too,
video and stuff, but like.
But yeah, they don't want to talk about the, like, ridiculousness that was that.
Yeah,
the rest of,
like,
that movie.
Once you mention Ivan Drago, you mention, like, a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's
yeah, but it, this film was cool. It was nice. It's like a... We get cool tributes to stuff. Like, we get the conversation about their third... Apollo and Rocky's third fight. And we get the training montage where he's chasing chickens. Like, we get all, like, that kind of stuff. So that was neat.
Yeah. Yes, and yes. So Rocky is in this movie, but this is Adonis's movie. This is Michael B. Jordan's. Michael B. Jordan is the lead character of this movie, and
I mean, it is called Creed after all,
right? But even so, like Sylvester Stallone plays a big role in this movie, but like I expected. I don't know. It's weird. Like, you think like maybe like with a franchise like this, like Rocky would be the lead character, and then like Creed would be like the secondary character, and then like it would be like passing of the torch kind of thing, and like the next movie. Like, Michael B. Jordan would be the lead character.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I can see that.
But this really goes all in with the idea that this is Michael B. Jordan's movie and that Rocky is very much a supporting character in this movie. I think that works really well because we've seen six movies of Rocky. We've gotten his entire arc. We've seen
Rocky.
We've seen his entire life. on screen. And this works as a terrific bookend to everything we've known about Rocky up to this point. You know, it's the emotional backbone, and to be clear, Rocky's story also has emotion in it as well. But, you know, this movie makes you care about Adonis arguably even more than you care about Rocky in this movie.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. It definitely has that. And it was real cool. I didn't notice it. But they do when there's three fights, basically, that kind of, you know, are the acts of the film.
Sure. Yep.
You know, and I didn't notice it in the second one, but it definitely in the first and third, it's a single take of Adonis entering, walking from the locker room, entering, climbing into the ring. And I don't know if it's in the second one. I assume it is. But it's real cool to see, like, to have that be the definitive progression of his character.
This recurring visual element that works really well, yeah.
Which is why I think I'm excited for Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, because he does really cool stuff like that.
Yes. Also, speaking of single takes, one of the fight scenes, I think the second one, is done entirely in one take.
Yeah. The fights in this film are so cool.
Yeah, but that one in particular is amazing. Like I was blown away sitting in that theater. Like it was nuts. That's really done in one take.
Was it really? I haven't looked up anything yet. Like that's crazy.
It's not stitched together or anything. That's actually like really done in one take. And that's like
I hope they had like a camera set up just filming the ring so I could see the three of them dancing with the two of them and the cameraman.
Like it's pretty much movements, is what that would have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. The movements of that camera during that fight are out of control.
Yep.
But like, you could not shaky cam out of control.
Like, it's so fluid and everything. Like And I mean, the final fight I thought was also great. The sound design is great. Like you really feel like every punch, and you feel like, you know, the score for this movie, man.
Yeah.
Really fantastic. There's this reworked version of the classic Rocky theme, "Gonna Fly Now," that plays
right
during the credits and during one part of the movie where, like while he's training and he's getting chased by like this motorcycle gang, and it creates this really incredible imagery.
It was a really cool, unique, updated, like, you know, this is set in 2015, you know, like that kind of updated version of it.
Yeah. And it brings like, this movie brings a new perspective to the story of a young boxer trying to make it, in this world, because I mean, Rocky was poor, but he was like a white guy.
You know,
like he was an Italian guy. He lived in an Italian area of Philadelphia. This is Adonis Creed. He has lived a pretty much a life of luxury for most of his life, or for the last 15 years or so after he was taken in by Apollo Creed's widow. But once he moves to Philadelphia, he's in this poor neighborhood. He's in like the ghetto area. And you get this like a different side of Philadelphia than you've seen in the previous Rocky movies.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it definitely was interesting to see that play a part in this kind of movie. And I mean, like you said, he drives up to his house after he quits his job, and it's like this huge sprawling mansion, and it's wild, like what, like it doesn't make any sense. And then he kind of moves to Philly to train with Rocky, and he's doing all this stuff, and it was cool. It was interesting to see that the role of the, you know, quote unquote streets, how that plays for like the up and coming, you know, boxer trying to prove his own legacy kind of thing.
Yep.
So I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was cool.
Yes. So how did you feel about the performances in this movie? I mean, Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone.
They were great. Michael B. Jordan's awesome. I want him to be in everything except for Fantastic Four, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, you know what? You're not going to see him. Fantastic Four 2 was pulled from the schedule.
Yeah, so that's right. So good for that, I guess. He did a great job. Sylvester Stallone was awesome, although there's a lot of times where he's got like Nick Nolte thing going on where he's just mumbling and he's not saying words. He's still awesome.
I thought Stallone was great. I thought he crushed it as Rocky. If this is his last time playing Rocky, I thought he did a phenomenal job.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And actually, I mean, I mentioned the National Board of Review named Mad Max the best movie of the year. They named Sylvester Stallone best supporting actor of the year for Creed. And a lot of people think, like, Stallone could get, like, a Rocky nomination and possible win.
I can see it. He did a great job.
Yeah, which would be nuts, because he'd never won for acting before.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. But, like, Rocky won Best Picture back in 1976, and won Best Screenplay and a bunch of other stuff. And Sloan was nominated then, but he didn't win.
Didn't win.
And so it would be crazy if, like, it came full circle.
This is how he won.
Yeah, when Creed beat Spotlight at the Oscars this year.
Sylvester Stallone will take home the Oscar also.
Yep.
Yeah, he did a great job. I thought the girlfriend, I can't remember her name now.
Bianca, played by Tessa Thompson.
Yes. She did a great job as well. It was really cool to see, like, this is, you know, an origin story, I guess. You know, it's weird to see the seventh installment of a franchise feature, you know, a character's rise and, like, his whole arc. We're getting the establishment of Adonis Creed, and they were really cool on screen together. They did a good job. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of it. They all did a really good job.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Bianca was actually a really fascinating character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the romance between Creed and Bianca kind of echoes Rocky and Adrian, obviously.
Right. This is basically, I mean, it's the same movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna mention that in spoilers, but it does follow the plot of Rocky pretty closely.
Yeah.
But I thought Bianca, like, there were shades of Bianca's character that I thought were really interesting. The fact that she was losing her hearing was, I thought, a really unique touch. And I think Coogler brings a lot of, like, really unique touches to this movie. One of them I'm going to mention spoilers, but the fact that she is losing her hearing throughout, and, like, there's this quiet tragedy to, like, every, like...
Yeah, that, and she's a musician.
And she's, like, a musician. Yeah. And then, like, there's just small stuff. Like, there's one scene where Creed is on the other side of the door, like, yelling at her, trying to get her, like, trying to talk to her, and she doesn't want to hear from him, so she just turns the hearing aids off.
Yep. You know?
And that's a really unique thing that I don't think a lot of people would think of when making a movie like this.
Yeah, that was, like, a pretty heartbreaking moment.
And so there's that. I did think the enemy boxer is a little thin, like, as a character.
Yeah. Yep.
Especially compared to, like... Like, this series has some great enemy boxers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Rocky 1 and 2, obviously, that's Apollo Creed. Mm-hmm. Rocky 3, you've got Clubber Lang, Mr. T.
Right.
Rocky 4, you've got Ivan Drago. Rocky 5 is not really a boxing movie, so... and then Rocky 6, you've got Mason the Lion Dixon.
Right.
Who I don't think... It's been a while since I've seen Rocky 6 as well. I don't remember too much about Mason the Lion Dixon other than his name, because I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
This guy, Ricky Conlan, is fine. Like, I think he has a pretty good presence when he's on screen, and, like, the final fight between him and Creed is phenomenal.
Yes.
And Ricky Conlan is actually played by a real-life boxer.
I wondered if there's a couple real-life boxers going on in this.
Yeah, he is Tony Ballou. He's a real-life boxer. And Mason the Lion Dixon in Rocky Balboa was also played by a real boxer.
Yeah, I know.
But there was the, and I think there are a couple other, like, people, real people involved in, like, mm-hmm. the various boxing community in this movie as well. So I think as like the big bad of this movie, he's fine. But, like, compared to, you know, the greats of the Rocky series, you know, I feel like there could have been more there. When Creed 2 happens,
right?
Obviously, I think they really got to go big with the villain.
I hope so.
So here's my pitch.
Okay, tell us. Lay it on me.
Adonis Creed has to fight the son of Ivan Drago.
My God. You bad man.
Because Ivan Drago killed his father, you see.
Right, I see. I follow so far.
I think that could be pretty awesome. That's all I got.
Okay, that's it. That's it. All right. Workshop a little. Come back.
I think that'd be great. Adonis that's versus... Awesome idea. Adonis versus Vladimir Drago. Vladimir Drago.
Yes.
It could be a stand-in for Putin. It would be great because of all the tension with Russia right now.
Yep.
It's timely again.
It is. History is cyclical, so we got this. And we'll just reuse the same movies over and over again.
History is cyclical, and also Rocky movies are cyclical.
Yes.
Hey.
Look at you go. It's almost like they're the same thing. What if Rocky is an allegory for history, Mike?
He stopped the Cold War.
That's what I'm saying.
And, I mean, we're going to go there. The first movie came out in 1976, which was the Bicentennial. Super patriotic movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. But in any case, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to mention before we move on to spoilers, Mike?
No. We can move on to spoilers.
All right. Cool. All right, let's move on to spoilers for Creed starting right now. So, spoiler alert, Creed wins the fight. Creed loses, but he wins.
But he wins the night.
He wins the night. Yes. Conlon won the fight, but Creed won the night. I loved that line.
That was pretty good.
I thought that was fantastic. So we were saying before how this film sticks very closely to the formula of the original Rocky. There's the romance with Bianca, which echoes Rocky's romance with Adrian. There's also the underdog story about a relative amateur getting a shot at the big leagues for the first time.
Yep.
It ends in a fight that ends in a split decision where the enemy ends up actually winning the fight.
Yes. Yeah. So it's Rocky and also Rocky VII. It's the same movie.
Yeah, pretty much. It echoes it very much. There are parallels to be drawn for sure.
Yeah. But it should be noted that it's not to the film's detriment either.
Yeah, no, I think it still works phenomenally.
Yeah.
I thought
is a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah, that could make
the same movie but still do it.
It could have felt like a retread, but I feel like there's so much new and cool that this movie does.
Yes.
It didn't feel like that to me.
I thought we were going to get a cut me rock. Like when his eyes swell shut. I thought it was going to happen.
I was thinking that too, actually.
But they didn't do it. which would have been too much, I think. But
I mean, the eye is also a big problem in this movie as well. So
yeah.
what did you think of Rocky's arc with his cancer?
What a weird way to phrase that question.
Because I genuinely thought the film was going to have Rocky die.
I thought he was done.
Yeah, early reviews of this movie were starting to come out, and people were saying how much they were crying throughout Creed, and I'll admit I shed some tears as well. When Rocky, before the movie had come out and I saw these reviews, I was like, what could make people be crying this much? And my only thought was, they're going to kill Rocky.
Yeah. Yes.
In some way. And I felt like that was something that was probably going to happen, but it didn't. He didn't die. It seemed like he was going to let himself die, like not get treatment.
Yeah.
I'm happy that didn't
happen. I mean, we don't, this isn't exactly true, but we sort of have a cancer montage. But like, it's also a training montage for Creed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a montage of Creed training and Rocky going through chemotherapy and being in recovery.
But it's effective.
Yeah. I think Stallone plays it really well. Like, I think he plays a very vulnerable Rocky, which I feel like we've seen in this movie, in the last couple of Rocky movies, but I feel like it's much more pronounced here than it is in the previous films.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a good bookend for Rocky's stories, and now for Adonis Creed to take over.
Yeah, I mean, do you think...
Inevitably.
I mean, if a Creed 2 happens, do you think Rocky would be in it? I feel like he would be. Unless Stallone dies before the movie comes out.
Probably, but I feel like he'll... But not... I don't know.
Maybe not as significantly as a character.
Yeah, I could see him, you know, sitting in a chair in the gym or in the restaurant or something like that. I don't think he could be as a... trainer.
He's still his trainer, though, is the thing.
I mean, when Creed 1 ends, yes. But, so, when Fair Creed enough. 2 yeah. starts at the end of the fight in Creed 1, Rocky will be in it. But, I don't know, beyond that, they could go visit his gravestone, Rocky visits Adrian's.
Right. Just have that make it a recurring theme in the Rocky movies, where, add a gravestone every time.
Yeah. Yeah, more chairs in the tree, apparently.
That's one of the things I wanted to say. When Coogler brings so many little touches to the movie that people don't really think about, I thought that was fantastic, that Rocky just had a folding chair in the tree.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And was it like, it's because I thought that was a really nice detail to have in there. In Rocky VI, Adrian was dead, and like Rocky would visit her grave throughout the movie. In this movie, you find out that Polly died. In between movies, and that was really sad.
That was sad, yeah. Yes.
And so his grave was right next to Adrian's, and so in Creed 2, like, Rocky could die in his grave, and you'll see Adonis visiting, that area, even though he doesn't know Adrian or Pauly.
Right, but who knows?
And then in Creed 3, Apollo's widow will die. and she'll also be buried there for some reason.
Yeah, because why not? And then eventually, by the time we get to Apollo Creed 7, we will have a new Greek mythological character that is a son of another Greek mythological character. I thought that was so ridiculous.
What, that his name was Adonis?
Adonis, yeah. I mean, at least they call him Donnie for most of the movie. But that was a bit like, come on.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, I don't know. It worked.
Yeah, I feel like Creed 7 should be Rocky's grandson.
Whoa.
Yes. Training under Adonis Creed. That'd
be great. I can't wait for that movie in 33 years. Or whatever.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting that, about Rocky's son, they mentioned in the movie that he moved to Canada and, like, is off with his wife. There was a quiet, like, sadness to Rocky's life in this movie that I thought was really
effective. As someone who's not very familiar with the later Rocky films, does his son play a big role in those?
In Rocky 5 and 6, yeah. He's like 9 years old in Rocky 4, and then in Rocky 5, which takes place right after Rocky 4, he's 14. Fuck it.
That's why not at that
but
point.
But in Rocky V, he's played by Sage Stallone, Stallone's real-life son, who died a couple years ago. And, like, they actually use, like, a picture of Sage Stallone in this movie when they show, like, his son, and it's like, whoa, it's, like, weird.
Dark.
And sad. Like, it is a real-life sadness on top of the movie sadness. And then in Rocky VI, he's played by Milo Ventimiglia.
Right.
From Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But his son did play a relatively major role in the last couple of movies, and so it was interesting that like literally the only character from previous movies was Rocky and Apollo's widow, who was played by a different actress.
Right.
Apollo's widow was such a minor role in the previous films. I didn't even notice it was a different actress until I just assumed that Felicia Rashad had played Rocky's wife. In all the movies until now.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I don't know. I am sure there will be more Creed movies because this has been met with great success.
It has, and I feel like there definitely could. I mean, I feel like if this is it, like it's a great movie on its own, and I don't think it needs any more. But
it's a Rocky movie, so like obviously they're gonna make more.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I really loved it. I'd be down for Creed 2 if it happens. Definitely.
Oh, should we talk more about... when did we talk about the villain? Was that before or after spoilers?
We talked about it before spoilers.
Okay. Why? Should we talk more about how weak he is? as a villain. Like, okay. I don't know.
What do you want to say?
It just seemed really weird. I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
He is a professional boxer who's going to go to jail, so now he's going to fight our main character because he's a bad guy because he's going to jail. I don't know. It seemed really weird. I didn't really buy the setup for their fight, I guess.
Yeah.
Not that it was bad. Like, it doesn't ruin the movie at all, but...
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the setup for their fight is definitely meant to echo the original Rocky. You know, that.
Yeah.
You heard about this like one guy who has made a name for himself and went to the underground circuit, like, but he's really amateur and like he has not like actually fought in the big leagues at all, and then he just gets a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
It's the exact plot. Like
you're right. It is. I don't remember the guy from Rocky being going to prison.
Well, no, Rocky fought Apollo.
Right, yeah. I'm so confused.
Yeah, I did love Adonis getting Apollo's shorts.
Yes, yeah, that was actually really cool.
That was pretty fantastic. And like the short, the music starts like plays the fanfare from Gonna Fly Now at one point during the fight, and it's like, oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments where that's at, like when he's doing the training and he's running with the guys on the motorcycles and stuff, and where it's like, I could almost jump up and cheer in the theater.
Yeah. If I wasn't there with my dad, I probably would have.
At least you have some restraint.
Yeah, a little bit. but yeah, I mean, so in overall thoughts, I really love this movie, Mike.
Yeah, yeah, also that.
Yeah. As someone who is a big fan of Rocky, who owns a PS2 Rocky game.
Wow.
Which is a fighting game, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's a game that I really liked.
I feel like I've played that, actually.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It's like you play as like the various... Like every boxer from Rocky 1 through 5 is in there.
Is in there.
I used to play as... and the different versions of Rocky from 1 through 5 are in there, too.
That's awesome.
So it was really cool. I used to play as Ivan Drago all the time.
I feel like he's probably the best character in the game.
He was really good. I remember it was really fucking hard to beat him. Because the story mode is just going through every fight in the Rocky movies, fighting every opponent the Rocky fights. And it gets progressively harder as it goes on, obviously, because it's a video game.
Right.
And Ivan Drago is so... I spent weeks trying to beat Ivan Drago. It was bad.
That's impressive. Is the final boss the Berlin Wall?
Oh, man, I wish. I mean, I'm assuming it's been years since I've played it. I actually don't know if I still own it, but...
how dare you?
I'm assuming the final boss is the street fight in Rocky V.
Yeah,
which is the lame way to end it, but
yeah, that's pretty shitty.
Yeah, kind of wish that game. They should update that game and add Rocky Balboa and Creed.
There you go,
because it would be great. I would pay like top dollar for that.
Yeah, get on that, Electronic Arts, probably.
Presumably.
Yeah.
All right. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog,
and you can find
me.
Okay, oh, never mind. You keep going. You keep going. Oh,
snap. Excuse me, Mr. Fancy Pants.
You keep going. What was your other thing?
I was going to say, sometimes we stream Dungeons & Dragons games that I am a part of at twitch.tv/geonerd79. So if you want to check those out, come join us.
Yes, and you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. As well as all of my podcasts on filmbook.com. I podcast about Gotham, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Arrow. And you can find our other podcast, The Complete Works, also on filmbook.com. And, you know, thank you so much for listening to Filmbookcast. If you're listening to this review of your podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, top discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. We produce so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for the next episode of Complete Works, where Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in Moonstruck, and check out the next film bookcast, in which Mike and I will be dedicating all of our runtime to discussing the most highly anticipated movie in years, the long-awaited sequel to a franchise ready to redeem itself after three movies that were not very good, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Road Chip.
I hate you so much.
It's going to be our 2.5-hour discussion on Alvin and the Chipmunks, Road Chip. Opening on December 18th. It's going to be a nuts madhouse. I don't know if you've seen the marketing, but Alvin's not in any of it.
What? No way. But I heard you see Justice Paw, though, at one point. But no one's really sure because it's got a glove on. So... It's going to be squeak-tacular.
Yep. It's going to be the best squeakquel of the year.
Yeah. Oh, you're the worst ever.
I didn't come up with that one. That was the subtitle of Alvin and the Chipmunks 2.
Yes.
Alvin
and
the Chipmunks and the squeakquel.
The squeakquel.
Obviously, we're just kidding. We're going to be reviewing Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for clarifying, Mike. I was worried for a second.
You're worried you have to shell out $12 for Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Yes.
On the day the Star Wars comes out.
Yeah. That would be the best troll ever. Just walk up to the ticket booth. I would like 2 for Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, I'm going to be going on the 17th at 9:30, and I'm pretty excited because I'm sure there's going to be some people there for Star Wars, but I'm sure everybody, there's going to be like lines and lines out the door for Sisters.
Yes. Yeah, so make sure you get there early, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. All right. Now, as we part, I do have some final words that I think I should leave you with these fine folks today.
Yes.
All right. you know, during this fight, I've seen a lot of changing in the way you feel about me and in the way I feel about you. In here, there are two guys killing each other talking about Creed. But I guess that's better than 20 million. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if I can change and you can change, everybody can change.
Wow. How inspiring, Mike.
Thunderous applause. Ended the Cold War right there.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
So you're welcome for ending the conflict in the Middle East, everyone.
Yeah, that was us. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We are out.